welcome to whatever is lovely, true, and awesome. I'm your host, Samantha Grace. This is the podcast where I talk about uplifting stories from the news, profile migraine sufferers in the public eye, and share inspiring song lyrics / poetry / quotes. This podcast is for those of us who deal with chronic pain or anyone who wants to hear positive stories. You may have heard about the 113-year-old woman in Spain. She is believed to be the oldest woman to recover from the coronavirus. And that's not all. Maria Brañas also survived the Spanish flu back in the early 1900s. In case you don't remember much about the Spanish flu, that particular pandemic infected 500 million across the world and at least 50 million people perished. Maria currently lives in the eastern city of Olot at the Santa Maria del Tura care home. She has been in isolation in her room for weeks. She contracted the disease in April and fought it off with the aid of one single employee who nursed her while wearing protective gear. Brañas has this to say about the staff at the residence. They are very kind, very attentive. YahooNews.com reports she was born on March 4, 1907 in San Francisco, where her father, who was from northern Spain, worked as a journalist. So Brañas moved to Spain with her family on a boat during World War I and also lived, she also lived through Spain's 1936 to 1939 Civil War. She is currently a part of a group of people referred to as super centenarians. They're all over the age of 110. Brañas' daughter, Rosa Moret, said her mother was in shape, wanting to talk, to explain, to reflect. She has become herself again. And my sources for this story are Newsweek.com, an article by Jacob Jarvis, and an article by Isambard Wilkinson in thetimes.co.uk and yahoonews.com. So what an inspiration to hear about a woman who, I feel the urge to say, she took a licking and she kept on ticking. I mean, to be that old and survive this scary thing right now gives me a lot of hope. For the true section of our podcast, I'm focusing on an American politician. I found her story particularly interesting because of the way her opponents mobilized against her because of her migraines. So I'm talking about Michelle Bachmann. She represented Minnesota's 6th Congressional District in the United States House of Representatives from 2007 to 2015. She was the first Republican woman to represent Minnesota in Congress. And her big claim to fame is that she was a candidate for the Republican nomination in the 2012 U.S. presidential election. I don't want to get into her politics. That's not what this podcast is about. So that's all I'm going to say about, you know, her political leanings. But listen to the way her political opponents describe Michelle Bachmann's migraine situation. Tucker Carlson authored an article with the headline, "Stress-related condition incapacitates Bachmann, heavy pill use alleged." And another quote, "A story printed in the conservative Daily Caller cites 3 people who have worked closely with Bachmann, saying she was hospitalized 3 times last year for stress-induced severe headaches. Those migraines occur roughly once a week on average and incapacitate Bachmann for days." The Daily Caller also reports that Michelle Bachmann implausibly blamed the headaches on uncomfortable high-heeled shoes. The article by Jonathan Strong is rife with scaremongering, anonymously sourced accusations. "She carries and takes all sorts of pills," says one of her former advisors, prevention pills, pills during the migraine, pills after the migraine to keep them under control. She has to take these pills wherever she goes. And my response to that last quote is like, oh, you mean like she has a condition? She has a medical situation that she's attentive to? Like, you wouldn't be saying this about somebody who has diabetes or had cancer treatment. Oh my goodness, they have to take pills with them everywhere they go. It's just hilarious to me. And it just shows a supreme lack of understanding for the seriousness of having a neurological disease. And the seriousness, but also the way that some migraines can be managed with proper medical care. It's just total, utter ignorance of what, you know, migraines mean for somebody. Michelle Bachman responded with these quotes. Like nearly 30 million other Americans, I experience migraines that are easily controlled with medication. Let me be abundantly clear. My ability to function effectively has never been impeded by migraines and will not affect my ability to serve as commander in chief. And another quote she gave. Let me just answer this. I gave a statement Tuesday. We were voting last night in Washington, D.C. We got here about 1 o'clock in the morning. I keep a very rigorous schedule. I feel great. And so we've answered that. What I'm here to talk about is the debt ceiling. So her campaign also made it clear that she doesn't take loads of pills, just the normal amount to anyone who actually understands migraines. She takes an abortive medicine if she gets a migraine. She takes an anti-nausea pill if she feels nauseous. And she takes a daily preventative prescription to keep the migraines away. And her spokesperson, Alice Stewart, gave this quote. 12% of Americans suffer from migraines. So if you're saying that Americans who suffer from migraines can't do their jobs, then I think you're going to run into problems. I like that quote. So when I hear this story, a lot of different thoughts come to mind. Number one, would they be pushing this story if this was a male politician with migraines? Of course not. They would not be saying that about a man. They'd be like, oh, big, strong, tough man can crush migraine. My next thought, could I run for political office with my chronic migraines the way they are? I mean, I've got my migraines pretty under control, but my main triggers are stress, travel, and weather elevation changes. All things that you have to deal with a lot when you're campaigning around the country, trying to get your face everywhere to get people to vote for you. So I think it is a pretty triggering job, but Michelle Bachman is not me. I don't know what her, you know, migraine situation actually is. I really like the idea of the visibility of a woman with the same condition as me. And I like the understanding that it could possibly bring to a wider realm of people, maybe get more medical funding for this condition to understand it, maybe more empathy for what it is like to suffer from migraines, the isolation, the comorbid conditions of anxiety and depression, the outrageous medical treatment bills, and the stupidly expensive prescriptions. There's just so much power in representation and feeling like you're actually being heard. So that's one thing I like about somebody in the public eye having the same condition as me. I really liked what chronic migraine sufferer and writer Dana Goldstein had to say in her DailyBeast.com article. It's kind of a long quote. Here we go. Here's the truth about living with this condition. We migraine sufferers can get a lot done even when we're in pain. I chanted Torah at my bat mitzvah with a migraine. I've done TV appearances while having a migraine, interviewed politicians while having a migraine, and sat through dinner parties, making polite conversation while having a migraine. It's perfectly conceivable to me that a president could function with migraines, especially given the constant first-rate medical care he or she would enjoy. I hope Michelle Bachmann continues to fight against the absurd suggestion that her disability disqualifies her from the highest office in the land. Excellent point. And another great piece of writing is in a blog post by Ellen Schnackenberg on migraine.com. She focuses on how damaging it is for migraine sufferers to see the way society is treating Michelle Bachmann's condition. And she makes a great point in this paragraph. The truth is that no two migraineurs are the same. Migraine is a spectrum as varied as a rainbow. Attacks can range from barely noticeable to rarely stroke and death. Most of us fall somewhere in between. Some migraineurs never miss a day of work. Others haven't been able to hold a job in years. Some migraineurs are disabled during their attacks by abnormal neurological functions such as the inability to speak or see or think. Most others do not. To assume that someone's attacks are the same as ours does everyone a great disservice. Obviously, Michelle Bachmann's migraine struggle being spotlighted really struck a chord with me, and I loved seeing how other women responded to it with those two different articles, one blog post. So if anyone, any of you out there have thoughts of your own, you can go to whatever is lovely, true, awesome at Instagram and message me, or I have a new email address, whateverislovely@att.net. And I'd love to hear from you, whatever you want to share with me. And I have a lot of sources that I need to list for this section. So thank you, Wikipedia, and articles by Brian Montepoli from CBSNews.com, Michaela Conley, Kim Carollo from ABCNews.com, Dana Goldstein, TheDailyBeast.com, Philip Rucker, and Santhea Somashokar at WashingtonPost.com, and Ellen Schakenberg from Migraine.com, and Michelle Levy from TheMighty.com. For the lovely section of the podcast, I have a poem by Rudyard Kipling. He is widely known for writing The Jungle Book, and I want to approach this poem letting you, the listener, interpret it how you want to interpret it. Let's look at it through a 21st century perspective. So it's called The Female of the Species, and it was written in 1911. When the Himalayan peasant meets the he-bear in his pride, he shouts to scare the monster, who will often turn aside. But the she-bear thus accosted rends the peasant tooth and nail, for the female of the species is more deadly than the male. When Nag, the basking cobra, hears the careless foot of man, he will sometimes wriggle sideways and avoid it if he can. But his mate makes no such motion where she camps beside the trail, for the female of the species is more deadly than the male. When the early Jesuit fathers preached to Hurons and Choctaws, they prayed to be delivered from the vengeance of the squaws. 'Twas the women, not the warriors, turned those stark enthusiasts pale, for the female of the species is more deadly than the male. Man's timid heart is bursting with the things he must not say, for the woman that God gave him isn't his to give away. But when hunter meets with husband, each confirms the other's tale. The female of the species is more deadly than the male. Man, a bear in most relations, worm and savage otherwise, man propounds negotiations, man accepts the compromise. Very rarely will he squarely push the logic of a fact to its ultimate conclusion in unmitigated act. fear of foolishness impels him, ere he lay the wicked low, to concede some form of trial, even to his fiercest foe. Mirth obscene diverts his anger, doubt and pity oft perplex him in dealing with an issue, to the scandal of the sex. But the woman that God gave him, every fiber of her frame, proves her launched for one sole issue, armed and engined for the same. And to serve that single issue, lest the generations fail, the female of the species must be deadlier than the male. She who faces death by torture for each life beneath her breast may not deal in doubt or pity, must not swerve for fact or jest. These be purely male diversions, not in these her honor dwells. She, the other law we live by, is that law and nothing else. She can bring no more to living than the powers that make her great, as the mother of the infant and the mistress of the mate. And when babe and men are lacking, and she strides unclaimed to claim her right as femme and barren, her equipment is the same. She is wedded to convictions in default of grosser ties. Her contentions are her children. Heaven help him who denies. He will meet no suave discussion, but the instant, white-hot, wild, wakened female of the species, warring as for spouse and child. Unprovoked in awful charges, even so the she-bear fights. Speech that drips, corrodes, and poisons, even so the cobra bites. Scientific vivisection of one nerve till it is raw, and the victim writhes in anguish, like the Jesuit with the squaw. So it comes that man the coward, when he gathers to confer with his fellow braves in council, dare not leave a place for her, where, at war with life and conscience, he uplifts his erring hands to some god of abstract justice, which no woman understands. And man knows it, knows moreover that the woman that God gave him must command but may not govern, shall enthrall but not enslave him. And she knows, because she warns him, and her instincts never fail, that the female of her species is more deadly than the male. So, what do you guys think? How would you interpret that poem? I'm so drawn in by the repeat of the female of her species is more deadly than the male. I don't know if he is being misogynist. It was written in 1911, you know? But I just thought it went along well with the Michelle Bachmann section. And I like the way that Kipling writes. I love rhyming. It's so, like, cheesy, but when you can do it well, it's very effective. So I hope you guys enjoyed that, and I'm working on some other episodes, second week or third week, that I've released it on a Friday, trying to do it every Friday. I think this is the second week. So I hope everybody is doing well, and take care of yourself.